Hello and welcome to The Catch-Up here on burst.co.uk. I'm your host, James Furnish. Alongside me today, I have the Pepper Potts to my Tony Stark, William Trimble.
That'd be all, sir.
Yeah. So it's just under 3 weeks until Marvel's Avengers Infinity War hits the screens, a movie that's been 10 years in the making. What we thought we'd do here at Burst is go back to the first movie in the series, Iron Man. So grab your flip phone, update your MySpace, because we're heading back to 2008. Will.
Hello, James.
Thanks for joining me on this amazing journey we're about to take.
Yeah, watching this film back was surreal. It was really interesting watching it back and just seeing 10 years. It's been 10 years.
A long time. Yeah, so what we've done, we've rewatched the film for the first time in a while, I think, and we're just going to quickly go over it, see what sort of things we've spotted, how different the world is, and because obviously it's going to be the big one soon. The film that it's been gearing up to, the thing that's going to break box office records, going to be huge. We're looking forward to that film. Should we speak quickly about that?
I'm really looking forward to Infinity War.
Yeah.
Coming back and doing this has made me realise when I kind of got on board with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I wasn't on board yet at Iron Man. I think it was Avengers I kind of started.
Yeah, which is what, 2012? So about 4 years after this one came out. Should we quickly talk about... Marvel, we had a look, didn't we, sort of researched where they were at that time, and we're looking at what sort of films had been out before, and the sort of comic book explosion that happened.
So before this, what do we reckon it was? It was like Spider-Man 3 was probably the...
Yeah, well, so from 2008, before this film came out, we had, three Spider-Man films.
We had three or possibly four X-Men films by this point.
Yeah, definitely three.
Yeah.
We had two Fantastic Four films.
Oh, yeah.
Which, less said the better. And then a Hulk film as well.
Hulk film. Batman Begins.
Yes.
2005.
Yeah.
Which really set the bar in at that time for the genre, for the sort of superhero film genre.
Yeah, which is sort of where you could see these superhero films could be...
serious.
Yeah.
And have tone and depth. And also Watchmen as well.
Yeah, which is also there as well. So these sort of ones coming out around that time. Let's talk about a bit about where Marvel were. So they were sort of helping all these other films be made.
To a point,
So. So they had their sort of hand in there. They weren't making a lot of money from it.
No.
This is what I've read in my research.
Okay.
Yeah, so they had, in 2005, they sort of put a plan together to make this universe, which obviously we now come to know as MCU, which is obviously one of the biggest franchises in film today.
I think it's worth taking a moment to sort of realise how... sort of what an amazing idea this was at the time. If you look at subsequent cinematic universes that have tried to be launched and either aren't doing very well critically or have just failed. So I think so you've got the Bat, what's the one that Batman's part of? I forgot the name of it now.
The universe?
Yes.
The DCEU?
The DCEU.
Yeah.
Which, and those films are, in my opinion, quite poor.
In comparison,
to Marvel.
Actually, they're not very good.
And then you've got the Dark Cinematic Universe, which was very recent.
Oh, is that the Tom Cruise?
That's the Tom Cruise Mummy film.
Yeah,
Which I haven't seen, but I know they have now scrapped it.
Yeah,
and I think they were going to try and tie in a previous Dracula film to that.
Yeah,
at one point.
Frankenstein they might be putting in as well.
Yeah, and that is now gone, or it looks like that's gone as well.
Yeah.
So to have this idea back in. So it was what, before
2005.
2005. You have to give Marvel a lot of credit.
I see. Yeah, obviously, it isn't easy doing it, as we've seen.
No,
many a copycat and many fail.
And I think the standard. Okay, you can argue a lot of things against Marvel, like it, the films are very similar, the tone doesn't really change, but they have been all in. They have been pretty good, and have been relatively consistent.
Yeah, very.
Particularly recently.
Okay. As you say, as for putting them all into a series, they've all got to sort of fit together. They've all got to have these moving characters, moving parts, and to still be such high quality with fans, with critics as well, to an extent.
It's
an achievement.
It's been genuinely impressive.
Right, should we get on to the actual film?
All the way back in 2008.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's talk about a bit. What were you doing in 2008?
Where was I? I think I was living in Scotland, and I think I was kind of like working out if I wanted to go to university or not. I was 20 at the time.
And we're still here?
Yeah, and I'm still at university. Oh,
hey.
Oh, this isn't pleasant.
I was in year 10, which means I'd have been 15. I was 15.
So young, James.
I was 15.
You were 15.
15, yeah. And this film. Do you remember the hype around it or anything like that?
I think I was in a different place to you because I wasn't at school and I think I was just working in a pub. Mm. So I wasn't necessarily around many people own age.
The regulars weren't talking about comics and...
The old regulars in a very Scottish pub, no.
No?
What did this film... Did this film have any impact, like, in a pop culture sense when you were at school, do you think?
I don't think so. To me, it was... I think we've touched on this a bit. It was the Batman Begins,
yeah.
And The Dark Knight, which obviously came out the same year as this, a bit later, isn't it? It's a bit later in the summer.
Yeah, Dark Knight is later this year. And of course, the hype around that was huge. Not only because things like we knew it was going to be a bit more of an action film and we knew the Joker was going to be in it, but also Heath Ledger, I think, had passed away
he had passed away, and obviously that was before the film had come out.
So it almost gave the film... Dark Knight, almost an iconic status before it happened.
Yeah, and it's a good film as well.
And it's an excellent.
It turned out it was a good film. I don't remember it being a big thing around my friends or anything like that. But it obviously turned into one after a few of the films came out.
I think part of that is before the films, who's Iron Man?
Yeah,
I had vaguely heard of him as like a C-level superhero in my head, you know, in my mental awareness of superheroes. Like, you've got Batman and Superman. I was never fussed about Superman, but you've got Batman at the top.
Yeah, Spider-Man was obviously the big one because of the films.
I was really into the X-Men films.
Yeah.
I was like, Iron Man? Well, who?
This is the thing with the MCU is they didn't have all the characters. They had characters, but a lot of them were unknown because they saw the things being done with Spider-Man and X-Men. They're obviously owned by Fox and owned by Sony, the distributing studios. So they had to go sort of find what characters do we have where we can make this universe. And the Avengers
was a thing.
And obviously you can see when in the film, there's a lot of mentions of, or you can see the seeds being sown. Especially, and it's, obviously we get to it, there's a scene at the end obviously where it sets up the Avengers initiative.
Post-credit scenes.
Oh, God. Wait. We'll get to this, but it's hilarious. I want to touch on how long it takes for it to... Well, I watched through all the credits, and now you have about three, one at the start, one in the middle, one at the end.
Right, and people know now, and people expect them, but do you remember... Yeah, post-credit scenes becoming a thing. I think that's something that Marvel has kind of innovated.
That's their thing, isn't it? They've sort of trademarked it, or not trademarked it, but... It's something you expect now. You see, when a film finishes in the cinema, people do not move.
Oh, yeah.
It's a strange one. Right, so we get back to the start of the film.
Sure.
And this character that no one knew of, Tony Stark. So the first scene we're introduced with some riffs from AC/DC, sets up beautifully, and Stark is in a Jeep, in a tank being taken. You don't really, you're in Afghanistan, we believe.
Yeah,
you're in the Middle East.
Yeah, he's comfortable. He's not worried.
Oh, and you get his character straight away. He has a whiskey.
Yeah.
He's being a bit flirty with some women. He's a bit cool for school. They set up his character quite well, don't they?
I think so, yeah. And that sort of is that when we get the first dated reference?
Yeah, we will talk about some of these dated references. Well, go on, you go with it.
Well, we get a MySpace mention very early on, which... And we were trying to work out, was that inserted ironically? Do we think MySpace was already seen as being dated at the time?
Yeah.
We're not sure.
Yeah, Facebook had just started then. Just started in the main... I remember I got Facebook like 2007?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Yeah, so it must have just been that time where there's a little crossover where MySpace was losing all its people and Facebook was taking it.
It was never MySpace at where I was at school. It was Bebo.
Bebo, share the love on Bebo. Yeah, I had Bebo as well. But less about the social media that no longer exists. Well, MySpace still exists, ironically. Looked it up. Justin Timberlake had a lot of...
Really?
Yeah, he invested lots of money into it.
Okay.
Yeah. Less about that. So we're in the cold open, aren't we? And then there's a missile goes off.
Yeah, and so the sort of the Humvee in Afghanistan is attacked.
Yeah.
By forces currently unknown.
Who could it be?
Exactly.
Could it be in the Middle East?
Oh, look, it's random Arab bad guys again. Hooray.
Yeah. So we flash back to 36 hours earlier, and there's like an award ceremony for Tony Stark.
Yeah, I want to talk about this sequence a little bit. Yeah, this sequence of events. So Tony Stark is presented as like sort of like the 12-year-old's idea of like the masculine ideal. So there's an awards due in his honour that he's too cool to turn up for.
Yeah.
And he's busy gambling and winning with attractive women.
Yeah.
Blows off his best friend, saying, "Oh, thanks," you know, and dosses the award over to some random in the casino.
He just like ticks off the cliche boxes.
It really is.
Isn't it?
And then the female journalist has a go at him about being a war.
I've got some issues with this character. This female journalist. She pops up a few times in the film, and it's hilarious.
And he just basically goes, "Oh, I'm too clever for you," and then proceeds to bang her.
She has a name, by the way, Christine.
Christine.
Yeah. From Vanity Fair. Is that a reputable?
I think they.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I know Vanity Fair for. I know them for front cover shoots.
I think the similar what the Playboy model is. You sort of had the glamour on the front, but you did actually employ some quite serious people.
It's just I find it funny that they could have maybe gone something a bit more serious. Okay.
And then proceeds to be like cleverer than her, and then bangs her brains out, and then. This weird thing in the morning, like the Pepper Potts character is effectively his mother.
Yeah.
So basically he's got like fast cars, he's too cool for award shows, and then he wakes up in the morning, leaves the girl in bed and goes and basically plays with his toys, i.e. his like...
His incredible. Gadgets.
Well, it's restoring classic cars.
Oh, yeah, he's not doing gadgets.
And then he's got his mum, Pepper Potts, to tidy up after him. It's a really...
But there's also this weird sexual tension
between them.
He's not really. Yeah.
So you've got this really weird masculine ideal / Oedipus complex going on.
Yeah.
And I don't know how. I think it was written ironically. It certainly wasn't played ironically. Mm. And I don't know if like the sort of the audience watching will have picked up on that. But watching it back now, it's so cheesy.
It's a weird thing about her character. Back to the Christine character. She. Lex comes back later.
She does, and asks...
With a vengeance as well.
Yeah, and asks serious questions later on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just very...
You lost all your reputable status with that sort of... There isn't really like a setup for how he sort of talked her into bed either.
No, it's just quick cut, I'm really clever and rich, you're going to sleep with me, and so she does. And then there's a line that Pepper Potts delivers when... Christine and Pepper Potts have the encounter.
Yeah, I know the line, yeah.
I also take out the trash.
It's classic. Like, zing.
This is not good.
No. Right, so where are we from there? So we meet Abadiah Stane, I believe his name is, the not evil at all looking...
No.
What is he?
He's kind of
the
like
one underneath Tony Stark.
He's like the sort of business partner.
Yeah, obviously, and Stark Industries, who at that time is a weapons manufacturer.
It is worth saying that we do get in the award show. So there's an award that's being presented to Tony Stark, and they do use that as quite an effective device to tell us quite a lot about the character. It does work really well. It gets a lot of information across in a context that makes sense. So we find out about. Tony Stark's parents being dead, that he's a super billionaire. Ooh. He's a super genius.
Quite funny thing about a super genius. Some of the things he built he was like 3 years old. He built his first battery or something, I think.
He'd assembled a circuit board by the age of 4.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
We want realism in these comic book films, please.
But that's quite a useful method of getting the character across and the relationship with Obadiah Stane.
Yeah.
Is it Stane the last name?
Jeff Bridges.
Obadiah Stane, the most villainous, non-villainous name you've ever heard.
Yeah.
That's quite a good way of getting that information across because it is worth remembering, at the time, we had no idea who Iron Man was, really.
No.
The audience.
If you weren't like a big comic book fan, I doubt anyone would know. So yeah, obviously this is a... What do you call it? What's the trope?
Exposition.
No, the it's a what's it called? A origin story.
Yeah.
It's the origin story of Iron Man. So you get this a lot of information early on just to set the character up. So then we're back in the Middle East after that.
Yeah. So have we met Brody by this point?
He does the award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, he does, and we find out a bit about their relationship.
Yeah, they were best friends, college or something. I don't know.
They don't actually say how they met, do they?
No.
Brody works for the military and he's like the liaison between the military and Stark Industries.
Yeah.
I think.
A weapon defense special.
Something like that.
There's a lot of
military acronyms.
Yeah, which is sort of goes in my head. But he's sort of the part military man, part Tony Stark's best bud. And that obviously comes into play later and in later in the series as well.
Are we going to talk about the actor who plays...
Oh, yeah, yeah. We could, yeah, so this is Terrence Howard.
Making his one and... Is he in the second film?
No.
No.
I do not believe he is,
to be replaced by Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Fairly quickly.
Yeah. A lot more charisma, Don Cheadle.
I thought... I could see why they wouldn't have been happy with Terrence's performance here, because I think he was supposed to be a bit of a sympathetic character. And he didn't feel sympathetic in this film.
No.
He felt just a bit whingy. Not necessarily because he was coming... Not necessarily because he was wrong, but he wasn't at Tony Stark's or Robert Downey Jr.'s level of charisma.
Yeah, I do think there's a bit to do with Robert Downey Jr. Is such a presence on the screen that it is just all about him, isn't it? So maybe him and Bridges are quite... Obviously, Jeff Bridges is an amazing actor in his own right. So there he does sort of... Robert Downey Jr. does sort of overpower Terrence Howard in these scenes. Yeah, yeah, so you do. Yeah, maybe that is a reason why. I heard there was a pay dispute. He wanted a lot more money. Mm. I think you said there was a...
I think, and also I read somewhere, I think he wanted to do more with the character than they were prepared to give him, I think.
What does he want to say what he wanted to do? No?
I'm not sure. No. I can't remember. It doesn't help.
Right, so then we're back in the Middle East.
Which leads up to sort of the cold open.
And yeah, so we're
showing off the Jericho missile.
Yeah, which is sort of some sort of super missile that...
It's like a cluster bomb, which I'm pretty sure at the time were illegal and have been illegal for quite a while.
Oh, really?
So it's this idea you fire one thing and then it explodes into loads of shrapnel.
This is to prove how bad Stark Industries was.
Basically,
sort
that's
of how much they can build. They build these super terrifying missiles.
And there's the quote, isn't there, that's really good. It's like... people say you should have a weapon that you don't need to fire. And he says, well, I prefer the weapon you only need to fire once. Because that tells you a lot about where the character is mentally.
Yeah.
Like, he has very little regard or respect for what it is he's doing, which is making things to murder people.
And you get the famous, when he displays a missile and he stood towards them, puts his hands up and all that.
And that,
that wind, that amazing wind. I think that's quite a famous thing, isn't it, with AC/DC playing in the background again?
Yeah, it's the not looking at the explosion joke, isn't it? Yeah.
Very cool. So then we catch up with that. He's been caught by this terrorist organisation.
The Ten Rings.
Ten Rings.
And now, looking at this, I know, so at the time, 2008, the Americans and the British were still in Afghanistan, we think. Well, Bush was still president.
Yeah, just about to be changed over, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that tells you where we are in this film, that... It was before Barack Obama. I found a lot of the stuff in the Middle East quite troubling to watch. And I think it's just because you just wouldn't have it done the same way now, I don't think.
No.
Particularly when he's kind of shown on video in in that kind of hostage situation video.
Yeah.
Like that ransom video. And that's we find out later a bit more about that scene. Mm. It was quite troubling to watch.
I just want to say how bad these terrorists are, by the way.
But bad as in villainous or bad as in incompetent?
Bad as incompetent.
Really?
So what they ask him to do, they ask him to build the missile.
The Jericho missile.
And the whole time, he's not building it.
He's building a suit.
He's building the first Iron Man suit with his friend, Jensen. Dr. Jensen, who conveniently saved his life as well. So obviously when Tony gets caught, there's some shards of shrapnel. Somehow he doesn't die in that first explosion, by the way, which is also amazing. There's a lot of Robert Downey Jr. / Iron Man has about 9 lives in this film, how sometimes he doesn't die or gets severe concussion a few times, at least. His heart gets some shrapnel in it. So this doctor builds a...
like an electromagnet to keep the shrapnel
next
out.
To a car battery.
Yeah, it's all a little bit dubious.
Yeah, not
it,
sure
really?
About this. There's movie science.
Yeah.
So the terrorists ask him to build the Jericho missile, the famous Stark Industry Jericho missile, which he doesn't do.
And he builds the Iron Man. So they're filming him,
and then they come talk to him and say, stop doing what you're doing and build this missile. And he doesn't do it anyway. And then only when he's just about to put the suit on and to kill them all, they're like, oh, maybe we should go check on him.
Yeah, has anybody checked what he's doing? Is there a reason why he's making the missile look like a suit of armour?
Just put someone in the room.
You would, wouldn't you?
What are they doing? It's, very incompetent.
They've got guys, I mean, like... they've got people around, just keep an eye
out. There's one point where they're all playing cards.
Yeah.
And one of them watching the films, they're like, oh, go fish. It's like, come on, guys. Terrorist 101.
Yeah.
Captured, hostage 101. Captured 101.
Yeah.
keep looking, look what they're doing.
And don't give them like a weapons factory to play.
He asked for so much stuff as well. It's quite funny. I want to talk about this Dr. Jensen character.
So this guy, are we saying he kind of invented Iron Man in a sense?
He is the whole reason this whole thing exists.
Yeah.
He also seems a bit of a therapist as well.
Yeah, he is.
He pulls Tony out of a slump.
He becomes the Tony's conscience, doesn't he?
Yeah.
In that section of the film, as well as saving his life. And he sort of, there's conversations about backstory and family. And he says, oh, I will see my family soon.
Very good.
Which becomes a prescient line.
Also a very good line, which I'm probably about to butcher now, which is when he asks if Tony Stark has a family, he says no. And Dr. Jensen replies like, the man who has everything but nothing.
Yes.
Oh, great line.
It is a good line. It's worth saying, it's not necessarily the last time we see old Dr. Jensen. Do you know about this?
No.
He mentions, he says, oh, when they meet, when sort of Stark wakes up, he says, oh, no, I saw you give a conference in Bern, Switzerland.
Oh, it's the...
On something, which then becomes the opening sequence of Iron Man 3.
Yes, great callback. Again, why this universe is so good.
It is, but...
The callbacks.
Yeah, I have to say, the callback in Iron Man 3 serves no purpose whatsoever.
I'm about to say, I don't even remember him being there. So, yeah. But it's a nice little Easter
egg. It is a nice little touch.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the terrorists allow them to build the suit. Mental. Then they escape, don't they? Or Stark escapes. Poor Dr. Jensen. All the work he's done.
But he it's a noble sacrifice because he says, "Oh, we need more tucks to that." Like, there's the classic bit of the progress bar isn't at 100%.
The easiest setup as well. Hit F11.
Yeah.
Hit Shift. Hit I, and it's like the suit is now active.
But the progress bar. We had the classic progress bar isn't at 100%.
Yeah.
So in order to buy Tony more time, Dr. Jensen sort of nobly. Pretty much sacrifices himself. There's almost a comedy scene where he chases three terrorists who have guns. Yeah. And you've got this sort of military untrained doctor shouting and firing into the ceiling.
Is it a bit of a Star Wars callback? Is that?
I think actually you might be right. I didn't.
Doesn't Han Solo do that at one point? He runs one way and then comes back with all them chase. They don't do the chase back, but it's very similar.
It is similar to that sequence of the comedy screaming and running with guns. And then he sort of goes into an open corridor and then he has that look where you can almost hear the guns being cocked off camera. And you go, all right, well, that's that then. Which buys Tony Stark some time to become Iron Man.
Escape, yeah. Also, another point where he maybe should have died.
No,
wearing a mask with holes in it for his eyes. Do you think the possibility of how many bullets these people shoot at him? He didn't get shot once.
Yeah,
I know I'm destroying logic of films here. I know it just seems
it's a suit of armor and it's plot armor as well, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. So yeah, he does escape. He flies out as well. Some sort of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, we've invented rocket powered boots quite early on. I feel.
Yeah. Very quickly
but
as well.
It's worth saying, before he kind of jets away into the desert, he does blow up all the Stark weapons. And this becomes a theme of the film of, like, atoning for sort of...
Yeah, which is when he comes back. So he comes back, he gets found again, somehow
in
the desert. He's been missing for 3 months.
Is it 3 months?
He does say, I've been missing for 3 months. When he comes back, he says to Pepper Potts, I've been missing for 3 months. So they find him, he goes back to America, back to Stark Industries, and a press conference, isn't it? So it's a press conference where he...
And this is setting up another callback for later in the film, this press conference.
Yes. So he sets up a press conference and says, we don't want to make... Basically, we don't want to make any more weapons.
Yeah, so this is his sort of acting on his kind of crisis of conscience without telling anybody, particularly not telling Obadiah Stane.
His right-hand man, his best bud.
His business partner.
His not-evil-at-all
friend.
Not-evil-at-all
with his bald head and big beard.
Yeah, and evil voice. So he comes back and then he starts working on a new Iron Man suit. Not before, obviously, another big plot point, he changes the...
So, something we kind of missed was like Tony invents a mini arc reactor.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that can power the Iron Man suit.
Which they have a big version in Stark Industries, which is powering something.
And Obadiah Stane sort of works out, you've got a mini one in your chest, basically.
Yeah.
And, yes.
Which is obviously powers the Iron Man suit in the future. But, yeah, so the old one stops working. Is that what happens?
I think he needs an upgrade.
He needs an upgrade, gets Pepper Potts. So again, this quite sexual tension scene they have as well.
Yeah, where Pep, can you can read this another way. Pepper has her hand inside Tony.
Yeah.
Inside Tony's chest and is reaching for his heart. It's a metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah, she removes his heart.
That they do play the comedy in that quite well. So whatever you do, don't pull it out just as she pulls out the metal thing.
Did you hear the bit of dialogue where he says, it's like Operation? And she says, like what? Like she'd never heard of the game Operation, which I found bizarre. Which, who hasn't heard of Operation?
I think that might have been improv. It was really good. I really enjoyed that line, but it did feel like improv.
So he gets his new one in, and then another a big plot point, which comes back later, is, should we keep this old one?
Yeah, I forgot about this. So isn't there a point where she presents it to him as a gift? Because later on we see it in like a display case.
Yeah, so she takes it away and gifts it up for him and gives it back to him. He says, chuck it away, I'm not sentimental.
No.
Which is, obviously it comes back to be very helpful later. He's building the Iron Man suit. He is making it, testing it. We get a bit of a montage of him like testing the...
It's the training
thrusters. Training montage. Very Rocky. And he's sort of...
But they play those scenes for comedy quite nicely. So there's a lot of him sort of arguing with like the robot.
Yeah, and this is where Downey Jr. sort of comes into his own, where he's obviously acting by himself to no one.
And just muttering away.
And he's really good.
He is.
It's one thing I've taken away from this is that I'm not sure I'm a big fan of Robert Downey Jr. or I don't know if that character, but watching this for the first time in a while, you're like, I get it.
Well, we have to remember that if we're looking back on this film from the perspective from now, Robert Downey Jr. has been such a crucial part of the MCU.
Mm.
And I think that if this casting hadn't have worked as well as it did, I'm not entirely sure the MCU would be anywhere near as successful as it now is. Because now it's just a money factory. It can almost do no wrong.
Yeah.
But I think had this film not done as well and had the central character been not as engaging, I think they would have really struggled.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, you're completely right. They set it up so well.
And he was not the biggest name at the time.
No, he's known for extracurricular activity more than his acting.
That's very diplomatically good.
Yeah, he was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is like a film which was a couple of years before that. But then obviously most of his other films were smaller and he was a bit obviously known for drinking and
partying
in LA.
Jon Favreau, I think, said that's why he cast him. Because it's so similar to the character. The central thing about Tony Stark in this film and in subsequent, not just Iron Man films, but any film where he's involved, is Tony Stark is seeking redemption.
Yeah.
He's always... That's pretty much what the character does, is seek redemption for things. Or, you know, or seek sort of more worth. Or atone surpassed.
Yeah, it's a lot of atonement, isn't it? It's a lot of atonement he has. So obviously feels guilty for these weapons this time, and that's a common theme.
Pretty much,
is he makes stuff happen, like he made in. There's obviously the
Ultron.
Ultron.
Ultron. It's a huge theme. Iron Man 3. Certainly Iron Man 2. It's a theme. Iron Man 3. It's a big theme. Captain America. It's the Civil War film. It's
accountability because he obviously thinks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it was an inspired bit of casting. It really was.
Definitely. So we have obviously the montage scene, and then Tony sees that there's a charity event at Stark Industry, which he did not get invited to.
Yeah, I mean, so where was it? He decides to just turn up.
Turn up.
I thought he was going to fly there at one point as the Iron Man.
No, that'd be good.
But he doesn't do that.
Yeah, so then that's where we get a callback.
Have we established in this training montage, is that when he flies really high up?
And good point.
This becomes quite a vital
point. The icing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, touch. So, yeah, so in the montage scene, he flies up. He's flying around practicing, and he wants to go as high as he can, kind of get the highest altitude, I'm assuming.
And he does actually, there is a quite a smart bit where he's got his onboard computer, Jarvis, which is voiced by Paul Bettany. He becomes much more important in later films. He asks what the fixed wing flight record was for an unmanned vehicle.
Yeah.
You can see why he's doing it. He's doing it because he's still a thrill seeker. He still wants to push the boundaries. So after a certain height, the suit ices up and he plummets back down to earth and escapes by the skin of his teeth.
Yeah.
And they, again, this as well as it being a training montage, it establishes the weakness of the suit, which is it can only go so high before problems happen, which will come back later.
Yes, which happens in a later part of the film. So it obviously has that happen. He then builds the suit, finalises it, gets the colours finalised as well. And while the colours are being finalised, he goes to the charity event.
Yeah, whilst it's being built. And yeah, so Hot Rod Red was the specific colour.
Yeah.
And it all gets mocked up in front of him. And so we sort of, we see an idea of the Iron Man suit before it becomes real.
Before it becomes real. So at the charity event, he has the run-in with... there's a Pepper Potts run-in, like a little...
Yeah, so there's the...
A dance they have together.
The dancing with the boss, and she gets all... Flustered. Terribly flustered and confused as Pepper.
He goes to get her a drink, and then that's when Christine, the Vanity Fair...
Oh, does she come back in this scene? I thought she only came back
No,
again.
That's... She's... She
all
comes
right, so
back
she,
again.
She provides the motivation for him to go back to the Middle East, doesn't she?
Yeah, so she says... So Christine, who we met at the start of the film... we thought that was the last we'd seen of her.
Yeah.
She's back with a vengeance. So she goes up to Stark and says, do you know your weapons are being used by both sides? La 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 la. Shows pictures of the weapons being taken off the truck by the bad guys.
The evil baddie terrorists.
Bad guys in air quotes. The bad guys who, which then obviously prompts him to go speak to Jeff Bridges, Stane, and say, oh, you've been selling them to the bad guys as well. And this is where we get the big reveal.
This was really nicely done, actually. Yeah. I thought Jeff Bridges. I think it's a common criticism of Marvel to say they have a villain problem, particularly in the standalone films where they're establishing heroes. And I think that is fair, but I thought Jeff Bridges was just fantastic because he's actually, when he's being friendly to Tony Stark, he's actually been really engaging.
Yeah.
He's actually been really. You could actually see yourself having a good time with him. He'd actually be quite a good laugh.
Yeah.
And then you see this ruthless side of him, and it's quite intimidating.
So he reveals they've been selling it to both sides. Stark, obviously annoyed. And obviously Stane as well says that he's trying to freeze him out of the company pretty much.
Yeah, so this is the reveal. So when Tony Stark came back from the Middle East and wanted to stop making weapons, there's a big hoo-ha about him being thrown out of the company, being like mentally unsound. Mm. And now it's revealed that it's actually... Obadiah Stane was behind it the entire time.
Who has seen that coming? So Stark, annoyed, goes back and gets his suit and heads to Afghanistan.
Yeah,
back to where he was caught.
More or less,
the same sort of village and sort of destroys all the weapons. Shows off his suit. This is like the first time we see the suit in
action.
Full. That's me doing my Iron Man. You can see that. Obviously, it's radio.
You look like you enjoyed it, though.
Yeah, it's like kind of like a karate thing. So yeah, he goes back to the near where he got captured.
Yeah,
shows off his suit, kills the people, saves them, and then he heads back to.
He's coming back home at this point, isn't he?
Yeah,
and then he gets. Intercepted.
We get all this, there's a bogey.
There's a bogey.
There's a rogue.
There's some good acronyms in this bit, isn't there? And there's, is it the CIA? Is it the FBI? Speak to Langley.
It's not us. That's what
hey, who? What? Why?
Yeah, so all these military people go a bit crazy. They're not sure what's going on.
And they're asking Brody, and Brody calls Tony Stark. He thinks something's up.
Yeah.
And he's going, what have you done? Have you put...
Is this you?
Yeah, have you put... But originally he thinks it's like, have you put like a robot into an active war zone or this kind of business?
Yeah. He doesn't know that he's actually in a suit himself until he reveals it later.
When he's been kind of clipped by one of the jets manages to get him a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's hanging onto one of them, onto the underside of one of them. Again, another Star Wars reference.
Yeah.
Millennium Falcon on the underside of one of the Star Destroyers.
Yeah.
He's hiding on the... There's quite a few in this film, isn't there?
And he also saves. So after that bit, they sort of fire at him again, don't they? And then he clips one of them properly.
Yeah, he takes out one of the jets, and then the pilot's sort of parachute isn't opening, and he kind of saves
him. Brody seems very angry before.
Yeah,
and when he saves him, he's like, "Oh,
you,
Tony."
Like there wouldn't be a massive investigation.
Yeah. Oh, and they said, "Oh, what? Why?" And it's training exercise. And it does a hard cut to them. The press conference.
Yeah,
saying it was
cut,
a training. Yeah, it was very good. It's a training exercise. So after that, we get a bit more of Mr. Evil, Obadiah Stane, who we find out now is the ringleader into Stark being captured.
Captured in the first place. So we establish his evilness beyond all doubt, because not only is he colluding with terrorists, he then betrays terrorists.
Yeah,
so he's so evil, the terrorists can't trust him.
Yeah, so he goes there and goes to their base, kills them all pretty much.
Pretty much. Gets like the plans for the Iron Man
suit.
Yeah,
takes
that Tony
the suit and
up.
The plans, because obviously it later comes to fruition that he's going to build a big suit. Which kind of looks like, I don't know if you remember the film, Iron Giant?
It does a little bit.
Yeah, he sort of builds an Iron Giant in the end.
But with guns.
So yeah, so we go back to there. He's getting his minions to try and build a suit, isn't he?
Mm.
They just can't do it.
I'm not Tony Stark.
Yeah.
I'm not clever like Tony Stark.
Which is very clever. And then we cut to Tony Stark and Abadiah sort of... Tony Stark is about to get a call from Pepper Potts.
Yes.
Who has now found out that Abadiah Sane is super evil.
Yes.
But has yet to tell him.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a time difference here. I'm not sure why she wouldn't have told him earlier. But she rings him.
Yes.
He goes to pick up the phone. And Abadiah Sane sort of swipes in and puts Tony under some paralysis.
Yeah. Abadiah Sane's got some magic paralysis-causing technology that is never seen or heard from again in any of the Marvel films. No. But it looks like it's quite effective.
Yeah. Then he sort of monologues about how evil he is and takes Tony's arc reactor out of his chest.
And leaves him there to die, basically, because he has taken Tony's heart in another act of evil betrayal.
Yeah, so he's taken it to go put in his own suit.
Doesn't stick around to make sure he's dead.
No.
But as is the way with all villains in all films ever.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
So he goes and then obviously he's off to do his own thing and Stark now, survival mode.
Yes, and I think at this point... doesn't Pepper call Brody to go and check on him?
Yeah.
And the sentimental, Pepper's act of sentimentality comes into play to save Tony Stark's life, I believe.
Yeah.
So she, when Tony's casting around...
Oh, yeah, she quit earlier in the film as well. She was not happy or something.
Oh, it's the fact that he left her at the bar.
Yeah,
she quit.
Yeah,
she had enough.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah, so she's sort of like redeemed herself in quite a short space of time. She's sort of like now she sort of was out of it. Quickly does the save, the Deus Ex Machina save, and in comes Rhodey, who helps Stark get his old reactor, which is on the mantelpiece,
and a lovely little into plaque that Pepper has made.
Yeah,
Pepper's had made
into his heart, and then we sort of have
the War Machine reference.
Yeah, there's a War Machine reference.
So Tony sort of hops in a suit and is off to do something. And Brody looks at the other suit and then pretty much looks at the camera and goes, maybe next time. And we're all watching us now going, yeah, not for you, Terrence, though, is it really?
You're not going to be in the next film.
No,
sorry.
It's going to be Don.
So then we have the final, the battle. The big fight scene.
We've missed the bit where Pepper has to... I love any time that we've got to get some secret files. So we've got to get some secret files off Abadiah Stane's computer. So
that happened before Stane paralysed Stark. This is why... So Pepper quits, goes to his office and takes the files.
Yeah, and with the USB stick of...
Yeah, this is all in the reveal of Abadiah Stane super evil.
Yes.
They have a bit of an encounter. So Pepper's got these files. That's why she then calls Tony, which then happens to him getting... paralyzed. Brody comes in after Pepper gives it a call.
Makes a save. Looks at the suit he's never ever going to wear.
And Tony flies off to fight
Obadiah Stane. At what point does Coulson...
Yeah, I was going to touch on that near the end. Yeah, okay. So Coulson's sort of sprinkled in. So this is Agent Coulson of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So S.H.I.E.L.D. stands for Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division. Oh,
yeah, a mouthful.
They do make the joke that somebody really wanted them to be called S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
They do make that kind of self-aware reference.
Yeah, so we get Agent Coulson, who's sort of, he makes maybe three, four appearances of, I'm here for a meeting with Stark. I'm here for a meeting. We need to talk about some stuff.
Yeah, we need to debrief you
about what happened.
Yeah.
And then obviously when Pepper steals all this information and Coulson's there.
Yes.
And they go off together.
They go off together to kind of... investigate Obadiah Stane's factory.
Yeah. And then there's like a warrant out for his arrest.
Yes.
But he's now gone crazy.
He's now gone power mad.
Which is where we have the big battle, which is where we get to.
Yeah, so we've gone from, with Obadiah Stane being sort of shady businessman to sort of colluder and betrayer of terrorists to attempted, well, he's murdered quite a few people at this point, yep. Attempts to murder Tony Stark, and now he's just in a suit and is turned into basically like a giant robot that wants to destroy the world.
Quite the character arc for Mr. Stane.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, a bit of a quick curve from a bit shady to super evil.
I think this is something that comic book films have looked at in the past when you've got to get somebody halfway reasonable but unpleasant to actually full-on evil. Mm. And normally is involved some sort of like shock to the brain.
Yeah.
So in Spider-Man 2, for example, Doc Ock has the chip in his head that malfunctions.
Mm.
Or they get electrocuted. So I think in the Ant-Man film, the villain from that gets like shocks to the brain that makes his badness super evil. Doesn't really happen with Obadiah Stane. He just goes mad.
With jealousy? I don't know what his
There's
thing
no
is.
Real like amplifying device that gets him from some kind of evil and treacherous to full on, I'm just going to tear the city apart.
Yeah.
He just puts on the suit and goes mental.
Mm. So in the battle, they have the sort of like to and fro. It looks like Stane's going to beat him.
Yeah.
Starts the monologue again, which is a classic trope. And it's Pepper Potts for the save again.
Yes. So, and it's sort of the Tony Stark potential sacrifice.
Yeah.
Which is another trope that the character kind of develops.
Yeah.
Is Pepper's got to press a button that'll explode the arc reactor.
Yeah.
And no, I might...
It might kill you.
It might kill you. Do it anyway. I mean, it won't kill you because we're banking a franchise around you, so you'll probably be fine.
Obadiah Stane falls to his death?
Sort of. He kind of gets...
Does he get like electrocuted? I don't know what happens. Blows up.
Kind of all of them at once. Yeah. Really, isn't it?
There's no blood though.
But he is dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
Definably dead.
So Stark is now... he defeats him, and this is where we get the final scene, before the final scene, of him revealing himself.
Now, this was innovative
as Iron Man
at the time, in terms of the idea of... Because they talk, Pepper and Stark talk about this, about, oh, I'd imagine I'd have a secret identity, and obviously I'd have somebody at home who would care for me.
God, the flirts.
Yeah, the flirts. And then he pisses that up all and goes and tells the entire world that I am Iron Man.
Yeah.
Which is really... I remember watching this and actually that being a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing we all know about superheroes is they have secret identities to protect the ones they love. But I like the fact that Tony Stark is such an egomaniac. He wants it to be him.
I remember that being a big thing about coming out or watching the film and like talking about the film to other people and that was quite a quotable line, wasn't it? I am Iron Man. Quite a thing in the zeitgeist at the time.
Because like, they stopped it. It was a hard cut after that, wasn't it?
And it goes some more AC/DC.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
It is a cool ending, to be fair, but actually it's not the ending.
Post-credit sequences, the invention.
Yeah.
Well, the popularisation of the post-credit sequence.
So, as I said towards the start of this show, how long it took for the first one, it's literally the end credits. It's five minutes from start credit to end credit before before the final scene.
So they're not pacing it like they have now. They have like sort of...
Yeah, let's say middle or start, middle,
you have
end.
You have your end credits, which usually has graphics involved, and it's usually graphics related to the film we've just seen, and then something. Mm. But this is black credits, bit of music, and then the post-credit sequence.
And in that, we get Stark coming home. Jarvis has been disabled, or whatever. He's not fully working.
He's letting an intruder in.
Who is it?
Coulson. No, it's not Coulson.
No, not Coulson. The setup for it is there.
Oh no!
It's Nick Fury. It's Samuel Jackson.
Oh,
with his eye patch, and he has had it with these goddamn supervillains on this goddamn planet.
Has he done Snakes on a Plane by this point?
Yeah, that was a couple of years earlier. So he comes here to talk about to Tony and says, "Oh, do you think you're the only superhero?"
Now this throws up a couple of questions in the timeline,
okay?
Because in the Avengers film, it is established that Tony Stark knew about Captain America. Because he says to Captain America, "I used to hate growing up listening to my dad talk about you."
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, no, that is, but he's... Well...
It's interesting that never... that idea of heroism never comes up in the Iron Man film. Obviously, because it was written much later.
Yeah.
But it wasn't ever alluded to, like Tony Stark's idea of a hero being different.
No, that would have taken a lot of planning. Which is,
I'm maybe being a little unfair.
So that's the end of the film, isn't it? It finishes with we're starting the Avengers Initiative, which obviously means we're starting the Marvel Cinematic Universe Initiative,
and we are letting the audience know that we have a plan here, folks.
Strap in.
There's going to be lots of them.
Yeah. So should we just thoughts on the film? Obviously, we've gone through it all there, but on watching it back, what was your takeaway from it?
Funnily enough, it's really dated in some ways, but it really isn't in others. For example, the CG did not feel out of place. It looked a bit old.
Yeah, there's a few bits in the cave. There was one explosion in the cave, which was a bit...
But the stuff with the actual, particularly with the reveal of the Iron Man suit, like the Mark II, the one that we think of, the one in red, looks really good.
Yeah.
There's like a shot that pans round the suit as like it's all the gears and things are whirring and sliding in and out of place. That still looks, 10 years later, really, really good.
Mm.
And in other ways, like the LG flip phone.
Yeah.
This is my favourite thing. So I think when Stark is under attack and trying to get help in the Humvee in Afghanistan, before he has the Iron Man suit, before he's invented any of that, he's got an LG flip screen phone. So it's an old mobile phone with buttons, and if you were going to text on it, you'd have to press 3 buttons to get 1 letter.
Yeah.
But the phone screen rotates so you can watch video.
And he face calls someone.
He does.
Is this before...
I don't
FaceTime think, even existed.
Certainly before FaceTime existed. I think it's before any usable video call, like to the public, existed.
Yeah.
I've got the model of phone here. If you want to look this up and feel really like, and get an idea of how this was presented, and this was part of the marketing of the film, was this phone.
Oh, really? This is like the big thing.
They had a deal with, I actually looked up, they had a few product placement with cars and.
Burger King,
there's a cheeseburger reference.
I need a good American burger.
American cheeseburger, he says specifically, was the name of a burger that Burger King sold, was actually an American cheeseburger.
Nice bit of research.
As opposed to all those international cheeseburgers. You okay, so the model of this phone is the LG VX9, I don't know how you'd say it, 9400 or 94,000, who knows. So LG VX9400, please look this up because it is just a joy to behold, this thing. It looks so old.
That's just amazing how in 10 years it looks so old.
I had the tech specs for the screen somewhere here and this is just amazing. Let's have a look at it. The LG phone features a 320 by 240p TFT colour display.
At least it's colour.
It is colour, just.
We're in the future.
A 1.3 megapixel rear camera. Oh, I love this thing. It's on Amazon. It's on not Amazon, eBay for $9.99.
I'm
quite tempted.
How much was it around that time though?
I'm going to have to do some more Googling.
Yeah, we'll do some more Googling. I'm just going to tell you something that was quite old or quite funny to me. We're seeing Abadie Stane riding a Segway. Did you see that?
I completely missed that.
Oh, God, it was amazing. We're riding a Segway, wearing like a white scarf. I think the Segway was meant to be, I think at the time, Segways, that was when they were looked amazingly futuristic.
Had George W. Bush fallen off one yet?
Oh, I'm assuming he must have done, yeah, if it was around that time. I found that quite funny. So we had a bit of the old references, didn't we? So we had the Segway, the MySpace, and your flip phone, have you found the price for it yet?
No, we can't find the price at all. Yeah.
Unfindable,
but going for $9.99 on eBay if you're interested.
Woo.
I would encourage everybody to look up that phone just because it's such a nostalgia. It places you mentally in the right space for this film.
Right. So just wrapping up then, I want your final, who is your MVP of this film?
I mean,
it can be character, it can be actor.
I think Robert Downey Jr. Like we were talking about before, I think that this film lived and died on his performance. And I think to a certain extent, the MCU lived and died on him becoming a bankable star.
Mm.
for this role and becoming synonymous with this role.
Yeah.
I think it's very hard to look at who would have made this work as well as him.
Mm.
There was a rumour, I'm now going into rumour territories that I've not researched in the slightest.
Yeah.
Was there a rumour at one point that Tom Cruise wanted this role?
Really? I've seen a rumour Hugh Jackman was offered the role as
really?
Well.
Really? Wow. Yeah. He'd done X-Men by this point as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, he'd just finished the third one.
Can you imagine that world where Hugh Jackman is Wolverine and Iron Man?
Oof.
That would have caused some really interesting content. Now we know that, you know, we're sitting in 2018 and
yeah.
Marvel is acquiring, or Disney is acquiring the rights
to X-Men. Yeah,
to
Fox, yeah, they're acquiring that
which
studio.
Which will put them in the same stable as Marvel. You'd be in a situation where you've got Hugh Jackman occupying two roles.
Mm.
But I suppose you sort of nearly had that with, what's the lad who plays Captain America?
Chris Evans. Yeah, he was in Fantastic Four.
He was Johnny Storm, wasn't he?
Yeah, and there might be one as well with Josh Brolin, who in the new Avengers Infinity War, he's playing Thanos. And he's also playing Cable in Deadpool, which is in Fox. So that might be another crossover.
I think Deadpool's the only way you can get away with that because Deadpool is such
tongue-in-cheek.
A law unto itself.
Yes. My runner-up for MVP, obviously I agree, Robert Downey Jr. steals the film.
Yeah, I think we need a runner-up.
Runner-up is Dr. Jensen. The just for his
good
role,
shout.
Just as his role in the lore of everything.
There are a few characters similar to Dr. Jensen that crop up. I'm particularly thinking of a character whose name I forget in the first Captain America film, who invents the super soldier serum.
Yeah, who gets killed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few little characters like that who invent these world-changing things or these plot devices and then disappear off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I thought Jeff Bridges was fantastic.
He was good.
I think, again, we know now that Marvel does have an issue with its bad guys in films that are designed to set up the protagonists for later films.
Yeah.
But I thought he was excellent. He was really watchable, actually.
Yeah, he was really good. I think, yeah, there wasn't any super bad performance.
Terrence Howard.
Yeah. Gat Slash and the terrorists for their incompetence in the
and
film.
And also just that's a really troubling portrayal.
Yeah.
Of things. I found sections of the film in the Middle East quite difficult to watch now.
Mm.
And I think it's just because we're so used to that part of the world being represented quite poorly that seeing it happen again and again and again is wearing. I don't think you would get anything quite as hackneyed as that now.
No. Yeah, no, yeah, good point.
But it is a product of the time. It is 2008.
Yeah.
The so
height-ish of those sort of like
yeah.
sort of things. That concludes that, I think. We've sort of touched upon most things. Anything else you want to touch upon in the film?
No, just enjoyed it. It wasn't, I think it's worth remembering, it wasn't a patch on The Dark Knight, which came out later that year.
No. Actually, one thing I would quickly, it has the highest Rotten Tomatoes, rating of any of the films in the MCU, still.
You're kidding.
94%.
I think there's a lot to do with expectation, though.
Tell a lie. Black Panther's just overtaken.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, Black Panther's got 97. So before Black Panther, it was the highest rated on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of those scores are subject to expectations going in, which is a very, I mean, I'm not complaining about that. That's a very human thing to do. If you go in with lower expectations and they're surpassed, you feel better. But if you look at the expectations for The Avengers, and I think The Avengers is a better film than this. I think both the Guardians films are better films.
Do you think if this film was, say it was not the first in the series, it was the 10th. I know it would be a completely different film.
Sure.
Would it have been well received?
No, it's not as good as the. It really is not at the standard that the current MCU is at now.
But we said before, it's a perfect setup.
It is a perfect setup film. And I think, and also you have to remember, the budget wouldn't have been nearly as high for this film, but neither were the expectations.
Yeah. Good film, though.
Good fun. Really enjoyed looking back at it from where we are now. And I think we're going to, as we do more of these films, I think we're going to, there's some stuff that will be a real kick to look back at and just go, wow, that was like that.
And some that might not be a great kick to look back
at. Some that will be just...
yeah. Which may be the next one we maybe do, which is where we might get a bit angry. literally. And
you're not going to like us.
Yeah, you're not going to like
us.
We're
angry.
So thanks for joining us here on first.co.uk for the catch-up. We hope you join us next time. And I hope you, obviously, maybe if we don't release one before the new Avengers film, you go and see that to see how good it is. And yeah, hopefully join us next time where we'll be looking at The Incredible Hulk. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers.